Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, as usual, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And this is the first, the 2014 inaugural Q&A with Layla podcast. So I want to wish you a very happy new year, Layla. Of course, we've already wished you a happy new year earlier on at the Hoffman Center.
Happy new year. Thank you.
Indeed. And also, this is an auspicious occasion because we have just recorded, had a live broadcast of the first Intelligent Medicine radio program on WOR. This is, of course, after our a short hiatus of health talk. We're back on the air. So we had a broadcast on Saturday. We're heard actually nationally from noon to 2 on WOR. They carry the second hour from 1 to 2 p.m. But you can also hear the first hour via streaming. And I'm not going to give you the URL for that here because it's too complicated, but we'll put that up on our website so that those who are desirous of hearing the first hour as well, if you are only listening to terrestrial radio on WOR, you hear the second hour. But we do 2 hours, as we have in the past, so I'm very excited once again for the relaunch of Intelligent Medicine. And what we usually do here, the ground rules are we answer questions, and the way that you can transmit your questions to us is via the email radioprogram@AOL.com. And we got a big backlog of emails, so let's start with this, which is just representative of the many greetings that we got for the New Year's. For the New Year, to be precise. We got one from Mihai, I can't remember, M-I-H-A-I is presumably her name. Thank you for the exceptionally informative podcast, Intelligent Medicine. I wish you, Layla Mudin, and all those who make this podcast possible, a Happy New Year. And we thank you, Mihai, we thank you for listening in 2013.
Thank you.
We hope you'll continue listening in 2014. We got some exceptionally important guests in 2014 on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and of course this weekly segment with Layla where we field your questions. So, well, take it away, Layla. What do you got?
Oh, let's see. Okay, we have one from Buck via email. I would really like to hear all there is regarding the treatment and recovery of C. diff. Thank you.
Okay, well, let's define, first of all, what C. diff is. C. diff is short for C. difficile.
Clostridium difficile.
Difficile. And in French and in Spanish, I think C. difficile means so difficult, right?
Sounds like.
C.
It sounds like, yeah.
And it is so difficult to treat. Clostridium is a type of bacteria. Actually, Clostridium species is responsible for deadly botulism. It's a gas-producing anaerobic organism, which is, by and large, an iatrogenic problem. What that means is it's a doctor-caused problem, or it's a medicine-caused problem, and it's an increasing problem because hospitals are infested with this bacteria. Patients who are immunosuppressed go in, they get antibiotics, and they develop devastating, sometimes life-threatening diarrhea. Mm-hmm. It's becoming harder and harder to treat C. difficile because, paradoxically, it's caused by antibiotics, but it has to be treated with more antibiotics.
Yeah.
But sometimes the antibiotics don't work anymore, and people have tremendous distress, weight loss, chronic, resistant, very refractory diarrhea. So, tough problem.
I believe that, isn't the treatment of choice still Flagyl?
Right.
Is there another antibiotic?
Well, the treatment of choice is Flagyl, but increasingly we're seeing, or metronidazole, increasingly we're seeing treatment-resistant C. difficile. It just doesn't go away. And then the next treatment of choice is something called vancomycin. But vancomycin used to be the bomb. But now we're seeing vancomycin-resistant C. difficile. And, you know, there's a race now between the bugs and us to see who's going to come up with who's going to come up with the answer, because ultimately we're running out of ammunition. running out of, we just do not have powerful enough antibiotics to treat it. So among the more interesting natural treatments for this, they're actually doing some research now on something called FMT, which means fecal microbial transfer, i.e., they get stool from a donor, and they clean it up, they purify it, they filter it out, and then they put it back in the person with C. difficile, usually via colonoscopy. You don't just say, here, drink this. No, that wouldn't be good.
No.
Mix this in your hot cocoa. No, we don't.
No.
We don't do that in medicine. We generally now. And by the way, this is not something to undertake in your garage. You know, don't do this at home. But actually, there's only a very few places that are authorized to do these clinical trials under supervision by the Food and Drug Administration. But it's amazingly effective.
The fecal transplant.
Yeah, and what it speaks to is the importance of getting healthy bacteria back in your intestine. Now, it'd be nice if you go to the health food store and get some of this, but the probiotics that we have, they aren't perfect. But you can get a lot of protection from C. difficile if you take antibiotics by taking something called Saccharomyces boulardii. And the product's called Florastor, right?
Mm-hmm. Wonderful against diarrhea.
Yeah.
Florastor, yeah, is the product, Saccharomyces boulardii.
And the trick is certain antibiotics are more likely to cause this. One in particular that's bad is something called clindamycin. Clindamycin is used for very tough infections or for people who are allergic to other antibiotics, and it is murder on the intestinal tract. So by taking probiotics, and in particular Saccharomyces boulardii, you can prevent it. You can, to some extent, treat it. Once you have it, it's a really tough problem. And we... also encourage patients to utilize certain herbs. You can use oregano. You can use peppermint. Those have potent antibacterial effects. Olive leaf extract may have some antibacterial effects.
Even coconut oil.
Coconut oil, yes, because it
very
has lauric acid.
Yeah.
And also, you know, this is a great... this is a form of colitis.
Yeah.
It's called... actually, the condition that it causes is pseudomembranous colitis. And this is a devastating intestinal problem. So since it's a colitis, we recommend that people follow the specific carbohydrate diet. And you can change the intestinal environment. Mm-hmm. You modify the flora by changing the food that the bugs get from the food that you eat. And if you eat the right kind of carbohydrates, you can sometimes reestablish a balance.
Right, right. The specific carbohydrate diet is from the late Elaine Gottschall. The book is Breaking the Vicious Cycle. It's for intractable diarrhea, as in C. diff. It's for Crohn's. It's for all the types of colitis. And we found great success with it. Highly recommended.
And in brief, it's not a no-carbohydrate diet, but it's a diet where you eat certain carbohydrates,
right.
Certain monosaccharides.
Monosaccharides, as opposed to the disaccharides, which are all sugars, and polysaccharides, which are mainly starches. The monosaccharides that are allowed is fructose. Now, that means the fructose in your fruit, in your real fruit juice, not the high fructose corn syrup found in your cranberry juice cocktail or your soda or your other soft drink or something.
So there's certain types of sugars that are allowed, like honey, I think, is allowed.
Yes, because it's
okay.
A monosaccharide, fructose.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you can get more information at, what's the website? There's websites about this.
Yes, there is breakingthevicious cycle.info. Breakingthevicious cycle.info. Very, very helpful website.
For all forms of colitis,
mm-hmm.
And including pseudomembranous colitis that's caused by C. difficile. Okay. So, next question. I have one here. I would like to take a liquid vitamin. Since I am unable to swallow pills, currently I am on Valtrex 500 milligrams since I had shingles. Valtrex is an antiviral medication. I had an ulcer in my eye. That is bad when you get ocular herpes in the eye. That's a very nasty, painful thing that causes corneal ulcerations.
Yeah, and blindness possibly?
It can in a person who has very poor immunity, but mostly it just hurts like hell. And it literally causes an ulceration in the surface of the cornea. So this person has been told they need to be on the medication. I don't know how long I will have to stay on this medication, which I have to grind in order to swallow it once per day. My dry eye problem is quite upsetting and annoying. I use TheraTears many times during the day. Looking forward to your program again. An avid listener of yours for years, Sandra. Okay, so this, you know, more generally, she's talking about dry eyes, but this is an extreme version of dry eyes. I mean, I think here, when you have a herpes simplex infection, by the way, one of the complications of the medication that's used for dry eyes, what is that called?
Restasis
is precisely this. It suppresses the immunity on the surface of
that's
the eye.
That's right, it's a chemotherapy.
And you can get ocular herpes. So that's a terrible, once you have your dry eye, then you get an ulceration, that's compounding the problem. So I would say this is a person who needs to take their medication for a while. I can't tell them that they shouldn't, but yeah. In terms of recovery, let's talk about dry eye.
Yeah.
What do you recommend?
Dry eye, first of all, we want to see if you're low in your essential fatty acids. That's a reason to have dry eye. But I want to talk about more common sense things first, especially for women, barring any infection, anything like that. Ladies, check your makeup. You want to make sure you're not using eyeliner pencils within the rim near your eye. You'd be surprised once you stop doing that how much better your eyes will feel. Hot compresses with washcloths is also very, very helpful in treating your dry eye. The other thing, and I'm guilty of this, staring at a computer for too long and forgetting to blink.
Okay.
That's another one.
But there's also something about the electrostatic field in front of your computer that does something that's exceedingly drying to the eyes.
I think it's all those pixels.
It literally magnetizes or puts a charge on some of the particles. I don't know precisely the physics of that, but there's something about that environment close to a screen that is not good. Okay, so practical explanations. I find that a supplement regimen works exceptionally well for that. So let's talk about that.
Well, definitely fish oil. Definitely the omega-3s mm-hmm. are helpful for that. General eye health, lutein, zeaxanthin, mm-hmm. bilberry.
And another essential fatty acid here comes into play, borage oil.
Borage oil.
And actually some studies have been done with just fish oil alone in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition showing that fish oil alone works. Other studies have shown that the fish oil can be augmented with borage oil or blackcurrant seed oil or primrose oil. All are sources of something called GLA mm-hmm. or gamma-linolenic acid, mm-hmm. GLA. And GLA is very moisturizing for the skin and
yes.
for the eyes.
Yes.
So it can be helpful. Other things, by the way, the eye doctors, what they like to do sometimes, they like to put a little tiny plug in the, there's like something that absorbs your tears. And if what they essentially do, it's sort of like if you want to create irrigation, you put a dam in place and water will accumulate there. What they're doing is they're damming the outflow of the surface of your eye so that literally the tears well up, even if you're having decreased tear production. I mean, this happens as you get older, you have certain medical conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you don't have Sjogren's disease. That's a dry eye condition. Other medical conditions can cause it. So, yeah, there you have it. I really like to use fairly high doses of vitamin E,
yeah.
too. So maybe 800 international units of mixed tocopherol vitamin E.
Dry eye has become much more of a prevalent problem. I think a lot of it, besides our lifestyle and pollution and so forth, has to do with what we're eating. Our ratio of omega-6 to omega-3
yes.
fatty acids is off.
Yep.
It's unhealthy, and this can promote a lot of these problems,
right.
such as dry eye.
You know, in effect, people become desiccated because they need a lube job. And it's not by externally applying creams and oils and eye drops. It's by taking it internally that you get an internal lube job. So that's the way we handle it. All right, what do you got?
I have here... Okay. Dr. Hoffman. This is interesting. This is from Michael, who's an OBGYN. Dr. Hoffman, as an OBGYN, I would like to recommend green tea extracts to my fibroid patients, but I'm concerned about the risk for liver damage. 800 milligrams of
yep.
green tea extract in one study using Beehive Pharmaceuticals product shrunk fibroids 32%. Wow. But recent reports of liver damage by green tea extracts and weight
yep.
loss products prevent me from
yep.
doing this.
And that's this important question to answer because amidst the flurry of anti-vitamin propaganda, I really call it propaganda,
it is propaganda.
Because course, we had a lot of this in the end of 2013. We did, I think, pretty effective damage control. That really kept me on my toes, even though I wasn't doing my radio show regularly on weekends. I was writing and doing podcasts and getting the word out. But when it comes to green tea, there was a study that was featured very prominently, I think it was in the New York Times and some other publications, that suggests that green tea is toxic to the liver. This is my interpretation of that study. I really don't know the quality of those green tea products. I make a green tea product. It's a very potent concentrate, EGCG Ultra. I have never seen a single liver problem with that patient, and we've given it with patients, and we've given it to hundreds of patients.
Well, you know, he specified that these green tea extracts were found in weight loss products,
yeah,
which are very questionable.
Who knows what the heck is in
exactly.
those?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't endorse any weight loss products.
No, nor do I.
And, you know, so, you know, I'd be concerned that it may be an accompanying ingredient. But this is what I would say, is if you've got liver disease, then maybe you shouldn't take concentrated green tea capsules or liquid. You can drink green tea, and it might be helpful and protective. You know, it's hard to overdose on green tea, you know, if you have 30 cups a day. But a couple of cups of green tea is not going to hurt you. It may actually help your liver. His angle was, what was it, on prostate?
Was for fibroid patients.
Oh, fibroids, yes.
Yeah.
Repeat that, because there actually are some studies that show that green tea is effective for fibroids.
He says that 800 milligrams of green tea extract in one study using Beehive Pharmaceuticals product shrunk fibroids 32%.
Well, I mean, that's, I think, among the benefits. We know that EGCG is helpful for the prostate. I don't want to be simplistic, but, you know, the parts of the male and female anatomy, although very different, come from the same embryonic tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's good for the goose may be good for the gander. If it's helpful for the prostate, it stands to reason it might be helpful for the uterus in certain conditions. So a modest dose, 800 milligrams, that's not very much. That's like one or two capsules of EGCG.
Yeah.
I think that would be safe. And unless the person has, serious liver disease, I would say that that's not likely to cause a problem. And as a doctor, you can easily monitor liver function.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many drugs that we give, like, for example, statin drugs. Anytime you give a statin drug, you always have to call the patient back 3 weeks later to repeat the liver test, because in the majority of patients, they tolerate statin drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But some patients who take statin drugs, their liver functions go sky high. That hasn't been a reason to take those drugs off the market.
That's right. Yeah.
They just say, you need to monitor, you need to use caution. So, you know, I would say in an abundance of caution, if this doctor wants to prescribe some EGCG capsules to the women under his care, or if patients want to do this, ask your doctor to give you a liver function test after 3 weeks, again, maybe in 2 months. And if it hasn't emerged then you're probably good, you know, to go every 6 months. I would follow the same kind of precaution that you might follow in taking a statin drug, which
sure.
is known to cause liver problems.
The quality of the product really matters here. You don't want to look for your EGCG in a weight loss product. You want a reputable nutraceutical, mostly, I would say.
Right. And EGCG is in a lot of weight loss products because it is a mm-hmm. thermogenic agent.
Mm-hmm.
It has been shown to...
provide some metabolic enhancement.
It is a bit of a fat-burning agent, and
mm-hmm.
therefore it's in a lot of weight loss products. But who knows what else is in some of those weight loss products. There might even be actual diet drugs in some of these products.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
the concern.
I was thinking they're slipping in some steroids or
yes.
something.
Some amphetamines, maybe. Even.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's some real...
Which was the original 1950s diet pill,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, there's some bad players out there, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this one's a little off the wall.
Okay.
It's from Michael. Michael says, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've heard the claim recently that the prostate-specific antigen, that's the PSA, the test used for prostate cancer, controversial test, because some people say don't do the PSA because it doesn't help. And other people say, well, absolutely, we need to keep doing PSAs. So we've covered that controversy. That's not what this question is about. I've heard the claim recently that the prostate-specific antigen is not produced by the prostate gland at all, but instead is produced by 5 known fungi species. Has it been proven 100% exactly from where the PSA originates? If this is true, then this is a huge, this is huge news. I've always speculated that cancer is a form of fungus or mold, or perhaps a hybrid between the DNA from humans and fungi. What are your takes on this? Well, my take on this, Michael, is highly skeptical, because there are actually, I think it's Hulda Clark, who is a alternative cancer person, who has a big following, who doesn't really, I mean, I'm gonna, some people are gonna feel offended by this, but she doesn't really have medical credentials to speak of or scientific credentials to speak of. And she writes on the subject of cancer, and she may be doing some people good with certain types of diets or certain types of herbs, because no question those approaches may be helpful. But to say that cancer is a fungus, or that it is that fungal DNA blends with human DNA and that creates a cancer cell, that's a little bit, that's bad science. Now, is it possible that a chronic fungal infection can lead to a cancer? I guess it's, one could hypothesize that chronic inflammation might promote mutations in the DNA that can cause cancer, you know.
Chronic infection will suppress
yes.
the immune system and maybe set you up
yeah.
to be more prone
yes.
to develop a cancer.
We could make that story. There are some instances where viruses have been known to cause certain cancers, certain leukemias. We know that HPV, which is a virus in the cervix, can be a cancer promoter. Mm-hmm. We know, for example, that a bacteria, H. pylori, may be associated with a higher risk of stomach cancer. So, I mean, it's not that off the wall, but so far we haven't identified five different fungi species that generate PSA, that the PSA comes from the fungus and doesn't come from the prostate. You know, PSA, it's actually produced in the prostate by a normal prostate. It just overexpressed and overproduced when the cells get out of control and become cancerous, and then it becomes a cancer marker.
Yeah, cancer, otherwise known as the new us by some very witty writer, I don't remember her name, is when cells, normal cells, transform and they become immortalized.
Yeah.
They don't die. They don't die the way they're supposed to. They don't go through programmed cell death. So there is the tumor or the metastases.
Right, but you know, I gotta say, I'm not big on that particular theory. I mean, look, there, I believe in alternative cancer theories and treatments, but there are some people doing things that I think are just too eccentric and are just not scientifically based, and so you have to take a critical look at them, just as much as you take a critical look at the indiscriminate use of chemotherapy and radiation. You can't be biased. You can't suspend your disbelief about one and wholeheartedly embrace the other. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Let's see here. I've got one from Michael. He asks, what is the best thing to do for the body for purification? A, what supplements would be the best for this? And he says, I already juice carrots, apples, parsley. Thank you very much and have a very blessed new year. Well, Michael,
this is an important question at the beginning of the year, right? Everybody
yeah.
wants to detox, 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 right?
And now we could wait for all the detox books to be released this month in February and diet books.
Actually, I have a really cool podcast coming up. I don't know when. I think it's in the month of January. It might be February. Mm-hmm. But it is with one of the leading scientific authorities on intermittent fasting.
Uh-huh.
And intermittent fasting is, I think it's going to become one of the new diet crazes, you know, like, just like low-carb, paleo, intermittent
yeah.
fasting is very interesting because there's some science to this notion of, in effect, detoxing.
Detoxing.
But you have to do it properly. There's a science to it. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. Caloric restriction has been shown to be beneficial. Anyway, the best thing for purification, first of all, Michael, you're juicing carrots and apples and parsley. You're drinking a lot of sugar right there between the carrots and apples. I see a lot of people going to the natural food store in my neighborhood and getting their giant size
And they are happy. They are getting high off that. Oh,
exactly,
man.
Exactly.
I've done it. I feel like, woo.
We evolved.
You know, just flying.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's basically a glass full of sugar. What I would recommend anybody do is drink pure water. You want to make sure your foods are organic, grass-fed meats, all of that. You want to clean up your diet. If you want to fast for a day or a half a day, you could certainly do so, unless you have blood sugar issues or things like that. I love the product Core Restore for a detox program. It's one that we use here. It's one that I recommend to our patients.
Explain what that process is like, because that's like a kit. You mm-hmm. just simple. Follow the instructions, and you will have a very nice detox.
Yeah. What it includes is a rice powder protein with a lot of different antioxidants and liver herbs, and along with a couple of supplements. One is like I want to call a superpower multivitamin, along with another herbal product that contains things like schizandra and dandelion, things to help purify the liver, which is very, very helpful.
And you know, when people do that, it affords them an opportunity to see what it's like to break their pattern of eating. You know, because for some people it's like, oh, go on a detox. Well, what am I going to do? I'm starving all the time. Here it's like, no, just eat, follow the instructions, eat these foods, don't eat those foods. It eliminates the most common allergens.
Yes.
And you eat very lightly while you take something that prevents you from going into starvation mode.
Exactly. You're taking a protein shake twice a day, so you're
right.
Not really completely fasting.
So,
unless you wish to.
So, A, you lose weight, but what people also find is they feel great because they've eliminated all these allergens and toxic food ingredients, and they're resting their digestive tracts. And they go, wow,
yeah. This
is what it's like to feel energy. And there was a relationship between what I was eating and how I felt. And I think that awareness can really be motivational going forward.
Yes, it's a great jumping off point for those trying to make long-term changes in their diet. It's great even for people who are a little more toxic. People with fibromyalgia are helped with doing a detox like this even more than twice a year, maybe even four times a year.
Right.
Maybe even something like every 2 months.
Right.
We have a few patients which have found a lot of success. The brain fog goes away, you sleep better, you become more radiant. There are a lot of pluses to doing a detox.
Skin clears up.
Skin clears up. Yeah. You do it in the right way.
Yeah, yeah. Or you lose that bloat. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, it's not so much... Okay, you lose like 3 to 5 pounds, big deal. But the face is less puffy, the mm-hmm. ankles are less swollen, less bags under your eyes, yeah. You know. And
these are all markers of toxicity or too much partying or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this is really, you're addressing all of that, and it's a great time because it's right after the holidays, and everybody's party pooped out, and it's time to get back on track.
We use this with our patients, but those who are listening, you can obtain this stuff via our website. Commercial message here. drhoffman.com. Go to the store. Check for any of the products that we talk about here. But Core Restore is available, and it's self-explanatory. It comes with a recipe book, and it comes with instructions on how to undertake the process. How long is it? Usually?
It's usually about 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
But you're eating good food for 7 days. You mm-hmm. have the option to fast for the first day or two.
Right.
But again, you're not really fasting because you're taking in this caloric rice protein drink.
Right.
Which is,
you know what some people do? Some people fool around with it. And what they do is they'll do like 2 days a week of Core Restore. I mean, after they do the initial detox, they'll say, that was really cool, but I'm not going to live on this.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 days a week, I'm going to do this. And you'd be surprised. That actually helps because the other days they can, you know, eat freely, carefully, but, you know, they can't eat with impunity. But it does give you a convenient way to kind of rest the body in mm-hmm. between normal eating bouts. Okay.
Okay.
That's good. All right. This one is from Miriam. Dear Dr. Hoffman, since the age of 14, I have suffered terrible insomnia. That's horrible. I've had it. I had it as a child, and fortunately, after I went through puberty, gone. I'm very fortunate. Testosterone actually did save the day. But I think the other thing that saved the day is my medical training, because I had such terrible sleep deprivation that I don't think I'll ever not want to sleep again. I look for any opportunity I can. Okay, so this person is now 48 and took fluoxetine, which is Prozac. She says, I was always against taking any drugs, but events in my life were such that my anxiety took over. But lo and behold, since I am on Prozac, I sleep wonderful.
That's terrific.
That's great. I cannot tell you how much that means to me. What a breakthrough. From the age of 14 till the age of 48, this person had life-impairing insomnia, and the medication flipped a switch in her brain, and she sleeps. Now, she has a concern. She says, my question is, how does the fluoxetine do this, and with what supplement can I start slowly replacing the fluoxetine as I would like to wean myself off it without losing my blessed sleep again? P.S. I love your radio show. Okay, so
I want to preface this with something which is very interesting, because she's having a very paradoxical reaction to an antidepressant, an SSRI, because what that does, how that works is by keeping the serotonin within the synapses of our neurotransmitters. When it's stuck there in that little alleyway, it doesn't progress to what it's supposed to become, which is melatonin. Melatonin helps us with sleep. So I'm very interested at how this is working for her. This is very...
Right.
Most people taking antidepressants have some trouble sleeping because the serotonin is there the synapse
It depends. Unfortunately, the field of psychiatry is such that every initiation of an antidepressant drug is trial and error. It's very hard to predict. Some people will be given an antidepressant drug, mm-hmm. and they'll be calmed or sedated. They'll say, I'm exhausted. Other people say, I am so hyper. Everybody's brain is different. And so, unfortunately, that makes the field of psychiatry very much a trial and error field. Much of medicine, the responses are more predictable. I guess what it is that her brain was very short on serotonin. Serotonin has a nice relaxing effect on her. We know that tryptophan is a precursor to serotonin. Tryptophan is used to help with sleep. 5-HT helps to sedate and relax people. She's concerned about the long-term effects of this, and you know, I am too to some extent, but sometimes people get such a profound benefit from an antidepressant that I say, hey, listen, you know, let's be practical about it. It's really working well for you. What I would explore if she were a patient, it's a little hard to do this on your own, is gradually decreasing doses of that while augmenting tryptophan, L-tryptophan, or 5-HT. But you have to be careful when you mix tryptophan and an antidepressant, because you can kind of go overboard. You can get what's called serotonin syndrome, which is like a meltdown of too much serotonin. So, I'm tempted to say to this person, hey, you know, it's working. Life is short. You're getting a benefit. Doesn't sound like she's having other terrible side effects. And thank God. Right?
Yeah. Other sleep aids, melatonin, mm-hmm. lemon balm, German chamomile.
Theanine, we like
Insomnitol that contains all of those.
Very good. The glycine product that we use, the...
Glysom,
G-L-Y-S-O-M, mm-hmm. Which is actually specifically for the kind of insomnia where you can fall asleep, but you wake up early.
Right.
It's good for early morning wake up. And it doesn't leave you sedated the next morning.
The wonderful thing about Glysom is it's glycine, which is an amino acid. It's safe. And what it does is it keeps your core temperature lower. We go into a little hibernation every evening when we go to sleep, and what glycine or Glysom does is it helps to keep your core temperature down so that you're able to stay asleep through the rest of the night, which is terrific.
Right. It somehow works like a natural hibernation agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, why do the bears, you know, they crawl into some place during the winter and they just go into a suspended animation, and maybe it has something to do with glycine, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter in the brain. The Japanese have figured this out, and that's why that's where we obtain this product from.
But I want to bring up an issue here. Science is now looking at, we have two sleeps during the night.
Mm-hmm.
The first 4 hours and then the next 4
right.
hours, with possibly a waking period of an hour or two
right.
in between. What do you think about this?
I think I have about 12 sleeps. Sometimes I wake up and I go, Thank goodness, because I can now I can rest, you know, because it can be. I have a very active dream life, which is good, I guess, you know, because I feel like, you know, maybe some things that I can't get done in the daytime, I get done in a dream state, and, you know, that recharges the brain. You know, one of the latest, I just read something that's really fascinating, is why do we need to sleep? Why do we, I mean, let's figure, you know, what is it about sleep? It's almost every organism needs to sleep. And yes, it is repair, and yes, it is rest. But actually, what they found is something quite interesting, is they found that we have these little ventricles in our brain, which are like little reservoirs of fluid where the cerebrospinal fluid floats around. And it turns out if you don't sleep, your cerebrospinal fluid gets dirty. Not really dirt with dirt, but it accumulates toxins.
So it's cleansing.
And when you sleep, there's something about the sleep that cleans out your ventricles.
It's the fasting during the night. It's
yes.
Detox.
Yeah, it's interesting. And if you don't do that, it's profoundly bad for your whole body and being and brain, you know. So we can go on and on about that. People mm-hmm. who have insomnia feel bad enough about having insomnia. We don't want to tell them all the bad things that happen when you have insomnia. So let's forego that. Any other questions?
Let me see here. Dear Dr. Hoffman, this is from Adrian. I'm writing to you in hopes that you can help my wonderful girlfriend who was just diagnosed with dermatographism. Which, as you probably already know, is a rare skin condition.
Well, it's not rare.
It's not.
I find it in a high percentage of patients.
Yeah. He is wondering what alternative treatments would be are available. I don't want my girlfriend to be on a consistent pharmaceutical prescription,
right.
So I'm really hoping
okay.
for
so
any suggestions.
Let's define it, first of all. Dermatographism, actually kids really get off on this because sometimes they learn to write on their skin. It's kind of cool. They can take like any, like a toothpick or, you know, some, you know, it's not like cutting, you know, cutting your skin. It's just scratching your skin. And then, miraculously, within minutes, a message appears or your name appears in red welts on your skin. And then it disappears. It's a skin reaction to trauma. And, it bespeaks an allergic state. It just, when you're in an allergic state, that happens.
Mm-hmm. Adrian does mention that his girlfriend was prescribed antihistamines or beta blockers,
mm-hmm.
which they're not fans of. So
right, okay. So antihistamines work, but they can have side effects. They can the powerful ones are sedating, and the ones that are non-sedating don't work as well. So it's a problem. So what I have found, what we have found, is talk to us about the low histamine diet. You know, you can take antihistamines, which block histamines,
yeah.
but you can also modify histamines via your diet. We can also talk about the Feingold diet.
That's true. Histamine promoting foods. There are histamine secreting foods. It's a very, very long list.
Okay.
With regard to histamine, so it could be very hard to do. One of my favorite things to do is I tell most people to take some quercetin,
mm-hmm.
maybe some stinging nettle.
Sure, which is a natural antihistamine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Clean up their diet a bit so it's more whole unprocessed food
mm-hmm.
rather than histamine promoting foods. Testing for food allergies is imperative.
Right.
And food sensitivities.
Which we use the IgG RAS, and sometimes we'll find, in fact, that a person has, in fact, we did in a gal who has chronic urticaria or mm-hmm. hives, which is a form of this, we found that she had elevated anti-gliadin antibodies, and it helped her to get off of gluten.
Right.
So this is a recent case that we saw, and you need medical testing to find out if you have that. I have to say, my observation is that sugar always makes this worse.
Yeah.
Artificial colorings make this worse. That's mm-hmm. what, you know, the Feingold diet, as you know.
Which is gluten-free.
Which is, it's a diet.
Chemical-free.
It's a chemical-free diet. It was used initially by Dr. Feingold. He was an allergist, and he used it to treat hives and urticaria in especially pediatric population. What he found was not only did the hives go away, but the kids' behavior improved. And now you've got the Feingold Society, which promotes the Feingold diet. You don't have to even come to see a doctor. You can actually go and get, you know, read their books, you know, go to their website, feingold.org,
mm-hmm.
and you can learn about the Feingold diet. It's a preservative-free and salicylate-free diet. good for many types of allergic skin conditions as well as behavioral problems in kids. Yeah. It eliminates red dye, yellow dye, and all those
all the stuff we
funky
should be
dyes.
Consuming anyway.
Anyway, yeah. But also, I find that a switch to a higher protein, higher fat, but lower carb diet does the trick. I mean, I once had this condition to some extent when I was a vegetarian. One of the main reasons that I switched from a vegan diet, I was a macrobiotic vegetarian, to a diet that contains meat and animal protein, is because I had intractable skin itching. And it, within 3 months of the diet change, gone forever.
Yeah. That's where food is medicine.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, we have time for, maybe one more.
Let's see here.
Let's pick a good one.
Okay. Oh, this one is from Ben.
Okay.
Dear Dr. Hoffman, I routinely put turmeric, matcha, cocoa.
Maca, you mean.
Maca. Well, matcha, which is a green tea powder, M-A-C-H-A?
I think he's talking maca.
Maca, okay.
Because it's a cross between maca and macho.
Okay.
So, no, I think it's probably maca. Maca makes you more macho. That's what
Okay. I routinely put turmeric, maca, cocoa, ginger, and cinnamon powders in my morning smoothie.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds tasty. But it occurred to me that perhaps these ingredients need to be heated in order to release all the wonderful polyphenols they contain. Mm. Do you know if I'm diminishing their maximum benefit by using them cold?
Yeah.
Thank you for your wonderful podcast and radio show.
You know, I've been doing a little cooking lately, and one of the principles of Indian cooking is that you take spices and you saute the spices in ghee, which is a good way to release the flavor.
Or coconut oil.
Mm-hmm. And you're like drooling thinking about
it. My husband makes the most incredible curry, all from scratch.
But it rather than taking the spices and putting them like cold and dry on the thing like at the end, like you're salting something, you blend it in with heating them and you release the aroma of the spice. So maybe that does something to release the goodness. We actually know that heating certain things releases some of the benefits, like if we have raw tomatoes, we get some lutein, but if we...
if we juice them or if we cook them...
If we cook
sauce.
Them, if you heat them and add olive oil, for example, it releases more of the fat-soluble nutrients.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess that's a point we'll take. Maybe he's being a little too perfectionistic about that. You know,
you might put it in your morning tea.
Right.
If you're concerned.
I don't know if a hot smoothie would be
that's not going to work.
Yeah,
really.
Because I like my smoothie with ice, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's really, maybe want to heat it a little and then put it in and then put some ice in and cool it down, you know, but.
Make some homemade curry.
But hey, you know, he's got it going on with the cinnamon because that's a blood sugar regulator. He's got the maca, which is a tonic herb, which is, it's reputed to be an aphrodisiac, but it actually increases energy and performance, not just sexually. I take maca every day, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you put in there?
Turmeric, cocoa, ginger.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That's turmeric, fantastic anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ginger is also anti-inflammatory, good for the GI tract.
Cocoa,
great for the brain, circulatory system. I mean, he's got it going on.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm all for that.
Yeah, I would just have the smoothie. Yeah, I agree.
Maybe throw some flaxseed in there.
Sure.
It doesn't taste like much, but it's really healthy, and, you know, you can put it in. What do you make smoothies at all?
I don't. It's pretty rare sometimes
in
the summer. We also have a juicer at home. We might do some green juices. In the summer, primarily. Otherwise, not really looking for it.
And, you know, one of the reasons I don't, a lot of people do, is that I feel that food should be eaten.
I agree.
And it actually, the slow release of food that you chew that's in its natural state and not machine ground.
Not predigested for us.
In effect, predigested.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, you get a big hit of sugar when you take a sweet smoothie.
That's true.
Very quickly, because it's a liquid. It goes into your system very quickly, and it will spike your blood sugar, and then you might get reactive hypoglycemia later. And plus, usually this kind of thing I have for breakfast, and if I have to go to the office, it may be hours till I get to eat, so I don't want to have something hitting a peak blood sugar at 7 or 8 in the morning, and then by 12 or 1, I'm like, you know, I'm starving, and I'm brain dead because I'm having reactive hypoglycemia.
Sure, sure.
So
you don't want your smoothies to be sweet. You don't want your smoothies to consist of fruit
right
all the time. It's got to be green juices. Anything you would eat out of a bowl of salad.
Well,
you
I,
can juice if you wish, but I always prefer we chomp on our salads.
Well, okay, so when I do a smoothie, which mm-hmm. is sometimes after, you know, like a lot of working out, and I like to make a careful breakfast. Sometimes I come back after like a 50-mile bike ride, and I just have to have something because I'm going to fall down. So I might make a smoothie out of whey powder, usually. I'll use whey powder. I will add some berries, and I may add some juice, like pomegranate juice, or actually a good juice after exertion is tart cherry because it reduces inflammation. It seems to aid recovery. That's actually been shown. And then I might put some flaxseed in it. I might actually put half an avocado in it. I certainly will put some coconut in it because I want the fat and the protein to slow the absorption of the carbohydrates and sugar in that. So it's just kind of a slow time release.
Yeah, and avocado, that's just wonderful.
And maybe a little bit of flax oil or even a little bit of fish oil. You know, if you blend it in there, it's not going to be too fishy tasting. We have some very nice lemon-flavored fish oils that are disguise the flavor of the fish oil. And, you know, you can kind of play around with that and see, you know, put in various types. You could even put a little spice, curcumin in there or something.
Sure.
That's a way to go. Do you have anything else that requires pressing attention?
No, I think
that's we'll save some for the next time because we're getting a little long on this one. So okay, so we'll reconvene next week and we'll do another Q&A with Layla. I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Hoffman.
My pleasure, and we'll reconvene with you once again later next week.
Oh, let's remind everybody about the lecture.
Oh, let's do it. Oh, that's right. Thank you.
January 15. It's coming up soon.
Yeah.
So please make your reservation. It's on menopause and andropause on Wednesday, January 15th.
Okay.
From 6 to 8 p.m. We will both be presenting, so we hope to see you, but you must reserve your seat, so please call 212-779-1744.
Do we have a snow date for that?
We might have to make one. We'll see.
Okay, I'm going to pray to the weather gods that the weather here in the Northeast will hold out. So far, we've gotten a little bit hit with a post New Year's snowstorm, but hopefully, we'll be okay. There'll be a mid January thaw. Let's think positive.
Okay.
And everybody will be able to attend. And I look forward to that. So check out our website at drhoffman.com for specific information. You need to call for a reservation, 212-779-1744. Quite a few sign-ups already, but we have more room. I'll be at the Hoffman Center. It's located in Midtown Manhattan, and we'll provide directions. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via a convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine. And she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.